Accession number 20937, Wheel 10.
Neville Howell, Rail 10.
Yes, we had rolled forward with a lot of tanks, and we arrived at this place called Vernon. It was late in the afternoon when we arrived there. We crept through some of the streets, and by the time we arrived at the riverside itself, it got quite dark and was raining. We waited around there for quite some time. It was where we were told we would eventually get across when there was a bridge over, a pontoon of a building somewhere. But anyway, eventually we were given the order to move off. It was very dark indeed, continuing to rain. I took up a position normally occupied by the wireless operator, where I could open the hatch and sit level with my driver, who would also have his hatch open, and therefore taking all the weather that was coming down, the rain, cold, and yes, and helping him, of course, to see ahead. We drove in a semicircle. I don't know exactly where we went, but we went in a semicircle and came back to the river some distance away from where we initially stayed. And here there was a pontoon bridge across that had been placed across by the engineers, and we took our turn going over it, and we went over, we crossed, that's my troop I'm talking about, we crossed, I would think, about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. It was just light, and the rain was easing off a bit by then. And so it was, yes, off again into France. Of course, we were on the go for several days on a road which was at times choked with other traffic. On one occasion, I can remember, we came to a standstill. This was daytime, broad daylight, and everything was stopped on the right-hand side of the road. And then from the rear, we were all closed up, nose to tail, from the rear came a motorcycle and a sidecar with the Germans driving and sitting in the sidecar, and they were roaring along flat out, and they passed within a yard or two at the side of the whole of the convoy, and they disappeared up the road. I don't know how far they got, but I never did see anything of them again. On another occasion, another day, we stopped, and the battery was more or less together, and we were stopped for a break, pulled off the road. There was a small hillock with a copse on top, and we were told to take up positions around this copse. And while we were having our meal, heard one of our boys open up from the other side of the copse. Knew it was one of our guns that had opened up. And we found out, when we went down the hill again to form up to carry on with our movement forward, that what had happened, he'd spotted coming back along the road which we'd already been along, was a German mobile workshop. And one of our boys in the other troop had put a shot through his engine, effectively stopping him. And when they went down, there were two people on board, when they went down, two Jerrys on board, they weren't hurt, but they were most upset that they thought it was very unfair that, being a mobile workshop, being rear people who shouldn't take part in fighting, that they should have had an armour-piercing round shoved through their engine. And so we continued bypassing places like Amiens and Arras. And so we carried on. And another occasion, this was just before we reached Brussels, there was a row of houses on the right-hand side of the road. Obviously, there were some Germans still occupying them in places, in parts of that row of houses. And it was agreed that that our tanks would take the front of the houses, and we would go along, my troop would go along the rear. But there was no problem, really. The Germans gave up, and were taken prisoner by the tanks, so there was no trouble there. We stayed there overnight, and while we were there, we were told that the next day we would be going through Brussels, that we would be taken through at speed, and that there was to be no stopping. Apparently this was because of the danger that once somebody came to a standstill in Brussels, they would be mobbed by the civilian population. So the next morning we set off, and we were taken at speed through Brussels. The whole of the street we were taken through, the way we were taken through there, the streets were lined thick with the civilian population, who were waving and cheering and tossing flowers and that type of thing. Yes, it made us feel like real heroes. But we were taken through at speed and out the other end to continue our advance. On another occasion, I remember passing through a small town or village, and for the first time we were brought to a standstill in the village, and for the first time I saw a small party of females, ladies, one of them carrying a baby, being marched through the street by the local resistance people who had rifles and that type of thing. And where I was stopped was near the little local town hall. There were some steps leading up to it, and these women were taken up there two at a time and were made to sit on chairs while their hair was shaved off. And I saw the one with the baby was taken there whilst we were there. It made me feel very angry to see this, and I'm sure most of us did, but there's no case of us interfering and putting a stop to it. We moved on and out of that place. I was to see the similar type of thing later on, and I believe that there's a general practice in Belgium, if not in France and Holland. We were not at any time heavily engaged by enemy during that run, and eventually, having passed through Belgium, I can't remember taking part in any major action in Belgium itself. We approached to very near the Dutch border, where we stopped. We knew that our battery commander and other people were going to a big conference, and when they came back, we were told about the intended airborne invasion on parts of Holland and the type of advance on the roads that would be made in order to link up with the airborne forces. And this was I'm not quite sure the place where this was, but there was an old barracks, Belgian barracks, I believe, near there, or Dutch barracks, one of the two, in which the Germans had been, but they'd been cleared out. There was one German anti-tank gun left on the road. I remember seeing some of our people go across to it to look at it out of curiosity, which they shouldn't have done, and somebody must have fired it because the round went whistling off down the road. I wouldn't think the recipients were very pleased with that. And for the first time, I saw what looked like a strange aircraft. And I went across to some AKAK, light AKAK people who were near with their guns, and asked them what it was. And they were able to tell me that this was a German jet plane, ME-262. And it was the first time I'd seen one. When I looked at it, as it passed over the top of us, it was dodging in and out of some low cloud. That was the first time I'd seen a jet plane. Anyway, the attack, as is generally known now, of course, it was scheduled for Sunday the 17th of September. We were told the type of advance that was going to be made. There would be the usual cab rank of our aircraft circling close behind the leading troops so that they could be called down to give assistance where necessary. We were not required, that's my battery, were not required to take part in the leading the van of the attack, which was being led by, as I remember, the Guards tanks. We knew that the main axis of advance would be up a single road, and that anybody who stopped for whatever reason on that road during an advance, that would have to be for a very good reason, because they'd be tipped off the road. The road had to be kept clear, so anybody knocked out on the road or whatever, or come to a standstill for mechanical reasons, they would have to be bulldozed off the road to keep that road clear. We were eventually lined up to take part in the advance late in the evening of Sunday the 17th. And we moved onto the road and shuffled along. I don't know how far ahead the leading tanks were, and shuffled along. We saw one or two of our tanks which had been bulldozed off the road as they'd stopped for whatever reason. And that's the day of the 18th. That evening we reached Eindhoven. When I say we reached it, my part of the advance troops, my part of the convoy that was on that road, reached Eindhoven. And on the outskirts of the town, as we went in, were some burning lorries. Apparently they'd been attacked from the air. That was some of our soft vehicles, which were trying to keep up supplies for the guards, tanks. And we circled through the town, and then we were brought, just as we were clearing the town, we were brought to a standstill again. Apparently the Germans had cut the road just up ahead, and it was being cleared. Eventually we got underway again during the night, and by the way, the only people I remember seeing in Eindhoven itself, it would probably have been midnight or something like that, when I saw a small gang of Boy Scouts who were apparently on some mission. I don't know what it was, but they were all young boys, and they were in uniform, or looked to be in Scouts uniform. Anyway, we got underway again sometime during the night, advancing and over bridges, canal bridges, river bridges. Grave was one of the bridges that we crossed, quite a large bridge there. We did see some of the airborne who had been dropped, and now this was the evening of the, this would be towards the evening of the 19th, we'd cleared the Grave Bridge, and we were taken off on a side road to a small place called Malden, which was about, I suppose, a 3 or 4 miles short of Nijmegen. And there we pulled off the road to the right of the main road that led to Nijmegen, and staged for the night. Early the next morning, just as I was putting my boots on, heard aircraft noise. It was light, just light, early. And looked and saw a Spitfire very low down coming towards us from the direction of Nijmegen, which is from the north to the south, waggling his wings, and behind, short space behind him was another Spitfire, even lower, whose engine looked to be stopped. The second Spitfire set down in this field, having just cleared some treetops, set down in the field about 50 yards from where I was, and slid across the field on his belly. The pilot had done a good job up to then, but unfortunately for him, the little track that we had taken to get off the road, part of the side of that track had been lowered, and a heap of earth pushed up. And unfortunately the Spitfire just didn't stop. It ran, slid straight across the field, straight into this bank of earth, and I saw it go over the top of that upside down. I ran across, and some other boys were just taking the pilot, getting the pilot out. He was dangling in his harness. The front of the Spitfire was completely missing, and they laid the pilot down on the track, and I could see him heaving. But I looked around, and by now there were a couple of dozen British Army soldiers surrounding the area, if you like, surrounding and looking at the pilot. And the pilot appeared to expire. That's one of the things, to this day, I've regretted that I didn't put into practice what I'd been taught when I once went on a course. It was a course of which included first aid and rescue, and it would have included dealing with a casualty like that pilot to see that his airways were cleared. And I rather think that he may have choked on his own tongue. Anyway, a padre appeared from somewhere, and later on an RAF 500 weight truck appeared, or 1500 weight one, small truck anyway, RAF, and they took the pilot's body away, leaving the Spitfire where it was. And on another occasion, while we were, the strange thing is that we were not committed to any direct action, in action against any Germans anywhere, but there was, of course, plenty of activity going on in the air. Next day after that, I remember seeing a lot of aircraft circling to the north, and they were obviously supply aircraft. I saw the parachutes being dropped as the supplies were going down for the people in Arnhem, and I saw a German fighter. I had good eyesight then. I had binoculars as well, but I saw a German fighter on the tail of one of these support aircraft, which I believe was a Boston, and the Boston was, the pilot chucked it around all over the sky trying to avoid the German, but eventually I saw the Boston go down. The German was still on his tail. Yes, and another time, another morning, I don't know what day this was, a load of German aircraft, early in the morning again, very early morning, a lot of German aircraft flying very low, you could say, just skirting the hedgerow, the rooftops of the little village of Malden, and where they were bound, I don't know. Not one shot was fired at them by anybody, because they came across so quick and were low down and they were gone. And we eventually had orders to go off to support somebody in another part of Holland. I'm not quite sure where it was, which town it was. We were on a road. There was a lot of fireworks up ahead. And by the time we moved through this town, it apparently had been cleared by what infantry and tanks were ahead of us. I saw what I think was a garage that was burning in the middle of the town, and some other stuff. But that was it. Then we went back to that place, Malden, again. Just to sit around resting, if you like, which suited us fine. And another occasion, we had to go off again to another town somewhere to support some action that was taking place. But apart from waiting around most of the day and hearing a bit of gunfire in the distance and some small arms fire, we were not committed. We didn't see anything really exciting. Back we went to Malden again. And so really, for that period of time, it was very restful for us compared with what we'd had in Normandy. Yes, but we eventually, we'd been in Malden about 10 days, we'd been there about 10 days. We were told that the Army Cinematograph organisation had opened a building in Nijmegen itself, which was being used as a cinema. And those who were interested could take a truck into Nijmegen, to this place, the cinema, and see a film. I was allowed to take a truck from the battery with those that were interested in going into Nijmegen, and this was about 10 or 11 days after we'd reached Molden, so that would bring it to the end of September, and went to this place where the film was being shown. I think it was a Bing Crosby film, I'm not quite sure, it was White Christmas or whatever it was. Not 100% sure of that. But anyway, civilians were also allowed in, and it was a proper cinema. Huge building. And, yes, the film was taking place, and behind where I was sitting with a couple of the boys from my battery were a couple of civilian girls, or young ladies. And naturally, got talking to them. I say naturally, of course it was natural enough. And eventually the cinema show was brought to a standstill. It was now late in the evening, getting on late in the evening. It brought to a standstill by a lot of noise going on outside. It was decided that we had to clear the place. And when we went out, AK-AT guns were banging away at German aircraft. We could hear the German aircraft zooming over round. They were obviously having another go at the Nijmegen Bridge, and it was pouring with rain. Now, I'd arranged for the lorry to come back, the lorry driver to come back and pick us up at a certain time, say 9 o'clock at night or whatever it was, I'm not quite sure. And so we had to wait there. We were able to shelter from anything that was dropping down in the way of shrapnel from the AK-AT shells, and shelter from the rain close to the building. And we stood there, and the two civilian girls were there as well, speaking to them, and they asked where we were, how far we had to go. I explained we were waiting for a lorry to take us back to Molden, and they said, oh, it's the same direction as we have to go in. They had bicycles. So I said, okay, it's raining. If you like, you can put your bicycles in the back of the lorry when it arrives. And when we get to wherever you want to be dropped off, let us know and we'll drop you off. I told them where we were in Molden. Anyway, yes, my lorry arrived and the girls put the bikes up in the back together with the rest of the lads from the battery. And off we went. The lads in the back shouted when the girls wanted to get out, which was about a mile and a half from where the cinema was, near the centre of Nijmegen. And off we went back to the battery then. The next day, one of the girls who'd been in the cinema, one of the girls came on a cycle to where I was, to where the battery position was. We were not in action, we were not active service place, it was really a rest area for us. And she found me, the girl found me, and naturally, like most of them in the area, they'd been very short of commodities, and cigarettes were the bargaining chip, if you like, in the area. And I had cigarettes to give. I remember during that same day, the strange thing was that a man and a little girl came as well. And the man approached, and I always remember his words. He said, please, it's not for me, it's for the little girl. Have you got something? In very good English he spoke. And had some sweets, gave the little girl some sweets. This area where we were was now on the opposite side of the road where we had been, where the Spitfire crashed. And it was near a school. Our battery headquarters had moved into the school. And anyway, to cut the long story short from that, I agreed to go back with the girl, together with one of my crew, walk back up towards Nijmegen to go having received now an invitation to come and meet the family and have coffee. So we set off to walk back up towards Nijmegen, the girl pushing a bike. And I remember we got halfway along there. There was lots of woods on the right-hand side. A lot of machine gun fire came from there when we got halfway along the road. But it didn't stop us, and we carried on walking up the road. And eventually came to where the girl lived. Went in, and there was all the family. Mother, father, younger sister. And they were a very nice family, or appeared to be. This is the first we'd seen of them. There was a lot of activity in the area all the time. I mean, we always heard guns firing and that type of thing. But now, whilst we were actually in the house, and we spent, I think we stayed there about 3 hours. So it was a fairly late evening. During that period of time, German shells were coming into the town and were exploding in the streets round about. But this was nothing for us. We were not, as far as we were concerned, we were fairly well sheltered, being in a building anyway. And when we left, I remember turning at the gate and saying to the young lady who we'd met in the cinema and had come to me in Malden, "Give your sister all my love." Now, they didn't have a great knowledge of English. We certainly couldn't speak Dutch. But, of course, they had the advantage in that pre-war they'd had lots of American films, which they'd gone to see. All the continent were the same, I think. They'd gone and watched American films, and there was American advertising on the radio. There was a lot of English spoken and that type of thing. So they probably had a better knowledge of English at that time than we would have had of any foreign language. And off we went back to excuse me, to Malden. The next day, the young lady turned up again, the one we'd met in the cinema, and said, "Will you come back again this evening?" Yes, I went back that evening together with another one of my crew, and realised, and I'm not ashamed to say so now at this moment, that I fell hopelessly in love with the younger sister. And yes, whenever I got an opportunity after that, and as long as we stayed in the area, and whenever we came back to anywhere near the area, I did all that I could to try to get there to meet this young Dutch girl that I'd fallen in love with. Meant many escapades in the future, some by rails, some by thumbing lifts and all sorts of things. You might query why you could do that kind of thing. You were absent from your post. Well, yes, but the battery commander realised what we'd gone through in Normandy, and that most of the boys had gone through a similar type of thing in the Middle East, and now the opportunity was there for him to give us rest and relaxation and a free and easy time. He did so. And yes, although we shouldn't have absented ourselves for for hours, yes, we were allowed to wander around and whatever. Eventually moved off from that position, which was still Malden, just Malden, back towards a place called Mook, where we were billeted in an old farm. It was not too far down the road from where we'd been previously. I was still able to make trips into Nijmegen, and by now I had borrowed the young lady's father's bicycle, which came in very handy, because the situation being in Nijmegen, what it was, that the Germans were still trying to demolish the road bridge by all means, sending frogmen down the river, that type of thing. And in fact, some of my regiment's ground guns were stationed on the bridge so that they could engage anything the Germans were trying to float down the river in order to demolish the bridge. He was still bombing the town, trying to bomb the bridge.